My simple solution to the problem was remove people from the scene and help them feel safer.
In response to attacks against Asian Americans, Maddie Park raised over $250,000 to donate cab rides to the Asian community.
There is so much more work to be done. We really need to come together and tackle this issue as a community.
Support the Asian community. Learn how at lovehasnolabels.com. Brought to you by Love Has No Labels and the Ad Council.
Listen to the highly anticipated 100th episode of Tank and Jay Valentine's R&B Money Podcast with artist Chris Brown.
Even working with you from Kerry Hilson, Adonis, back in the day, I was 15, 14 doing that album. So like I said, I was in school, like, okay, this is how you do it. This is how you make a song. There's a verse, a pre-chorus, and then a hook. I didn't know none of that.
You learned that over a summer, bro.
That's what it felt like.
That's what it felt like.
Listen to R&B Money on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Inside the Studio on iHeartRadio. My name's Jordan Runtog, but enough about me. Community is a crucial word for my guest today. He's amassed a close circle of colleagues and collaborators outside of his musical home in The National, the indie rock outfit he helped co-found 2 decades ago. Many of these friends make an appearance on How Long Do You Think It's Gonna Last, the sophomore record with Bon Iver's Justin Vernon as Big Red Machine. This deeply personal work features a multitude of voices, including Sharon Van Etten, Fleet Foxes, Ben Howard, and Taylor Swift. His working relationship with the pop superstar began in 2020 when he co-produced her twin lockdown offerings Evermore and Folklore, the latter of which earned him an Album of the Year Grammy earlier this year. But despite Swift's high wattage star power, How Long Do You Think It's Gonna Last is certainly a group effort, an egalitarian enterprise brimming with warmth. The album is, simply put, a triumph, touching on themes of loss, family, and mental health, and the complex interplay between all three. I'm so happy to welcome Aaron Dessner.
Thanks so much.
The album is absolutely amazing. And there's a great quote from Justin recently where he said, "It's not really a band, but tons of lead singers." And along those lines, what amazed me was that despite all these different voices, there was such a unity to this album. Was that a challenge to keep everything sounding so cohesive?
Yeah, well, it was interesting. I think that, you know, because it's like a band, but there's no windows and doors on the, and there's, you know, kind of this multitude of voices, which was always our idea, that they're almost like different characters in the same book or something. And maybe the music, which I do sort of initiate all the music, and maybe that's a common thread. And then I think thematically, somehow the songs really feel all related to each other. And so I don't know. Yeah, it does feel very cohesive, which was, honestly, it was a wonderful realization at the end of the process, because we're kind of, you know, we didn't really, it's more about process than product in a way. And I think when we arrived at the end of the journey and there was this album, it was really kind of amazing to realize that it is cohesive, and that it really does feel like there's this interconnected thing going on with all the voices.
You mentioned having the different voices being like characters in a book. I was going to ask you, how do you decide who to bring on board for this? Is it like a case of casting a song almost one would a part in a film, or is it more freeform than that?
I think it's more about relationships where it's almost like, you know, music to me is very collaborative, and it's about friendship, and it's about sort of family and community. And like, I'm idealistic that way, but I like to imagine that it's an earlier era of rock and roll or of music where, like, you know, people would wander down the hall and play on each other's records. Or, you know, there's a reason why Jerry Garcia was on every record in 1967 that was made in San Francisco or whatever. So like, this to me, it's everyone on this record I've either made a record with or wanted to make a record with. So I guess that's how we thought of it. It wasn't like, oh, let's get this superstar on this song. It's more like we just happened to be working together, and it like is a very natural, organic process.
You took the words right out of my mouth. I was going to ask, obviously, the Grateful Dead means so much to you, and I'm hard-pressed to think of a band that defines musical community to me than the Dead, both with their fans and then also with Jerry, like you said, playing on, you know, David Crosby's album and Stephen Stills' album, just everybody's album in the late 60s. I was wondering how much of your relationship with the Dead influenced your desire to have this musical community around you.
It's like an indelible imprint on my psyche or something from like when I was a little kid, because that's how I discovered music. And that's what my brother and I, like, from a very early age, because we grew up in suburban Ohio, which was like a lot, I mean, everywhere in the early 80s. Well, I was born in 1976, but growing up, like when I first started playing music, I was probably 7 years old, and already we were listening to the Grateful Dead then. And then when you start to really play guitar and you're like, well, why can't I play like him exactly? You know, like, why can't I figure this out? And I just was a big influence, but I do really like, and I think with Big Red Machine, Justin and I and a lot of other people involved with it, I think it is sort of meant to be that kind of thing where it's like a band that's very collaborative that also embraces improvisation, where the paint is still wet, you know, and it's not overtly commercial, but it's also, I don't know, I think it's different than like my other band, The National, which is much more intense kind of, and more of like an old brotherhood or something. This is like very much like a kind of more of a communal thing.
Do you have an expanding list of people that you want to bring on board, or is it almost like working within the same family, almost like Christopher Guest uses the same actors in his film? Is it, do you kind of want to keep it to the community you have now, or do you have a longer list of people that you'd like to work with in the future on Big Red Machine projects?
I feel like Big Red Machine can be very open to interpretation. Like, we could easily change the next time we make a record or a project. And I think I do like the idea that it would evolve and that other people could come into it. I think it's an interesting concept. You know, it feels both wide open and like kind of intimate at the same time. So I think, but yeah, there's so many people I admire in the world to play music and sing and stuff. So obviously if it's a chance, it is kind of that kind of project where it's the sort of thing you can easily invite someone into and maybe have a moment where you make something together. And that's how I really learn and grow as a musician. So I always kind of welcome that.
I was thinking about how cool it would be to tour this album, almost like a little mini traveling festival, which would probably be a logistical nightmare. But would you ever do almost like a Last Waltz style couple of shows where you get everybody?
Definitely. I mean, that's actually something Justin has brought up quite a bit, and like that we want to find the right places or the right way to do this properly, because we would want to have as many people that are on the record there, and we would want to have a chance to really rehearse it and perform it and document it. And I think it could be a lot of fun. It's because I sort of imagined this Big Red Machine album as like the Last Waltz. Maybe it's because I was finishing it during the pandemic, but it was a little bit like, well, if I never play another song, let's go out with a hoot, you know, or something. So it was a little bit like that.
I mentioned all the voices on there, and I hasten to add, one of them is yours. You sing several songs on the album, Magnolia, The Ghost of Cincinnati. What led you to take these on? Was it the subject matter? Was it something about the subject matter that made you want to impart those messages yourself?
It was both. Like, I think part of it was, you know, like the song Brycey, which is really, it's almost like a love letter to my twin brother for, you know, helping me pull out of a tailspin when we were younger. And I think once I wrote that song, and the words came and the melodies came, and the truth is, whenever I write music, I always have something in my head, or I'm singing under my breath. And I think it was really Justin who was kind of like pushing me a little, like, go forth, young son, and sing finally. So like at 45 years old, I'm like making my debut as with my voice. But you know, I think it's also, I've always been comfortable being more like generating the music and setting a scene for other people, almost like a ventriloquist or something, where I see myself, I have an easy time like empathizing with what someone else is singing. Obviously Matt Bernier is such a gifted singer and lyricist in The National, and people like Justin and Taylor Swift, who I got to work with. So it's not something I see myself like suddenly becoming Mr. Singer guy, but it is nice to do it. And it felt very like natural.
I was going to say, was it rewarding for you?
I mean, I'm not a narcissist. Hopefully I'm not a narcissist. So like, I wasn't like, yes, but, you know, but it was, I can listen to my time in the spotlight. No, I can listen to those songs and really, I feel something, you know, I feel they're honest and I feel they're compelling. So yeah, it is rewarding to like be able to do it, especially in the context of all these amazing singers, you know. So it's like, it is daunting on some level, but actually I think it works. That's good. But it helps that like Justin is harmonizing with me, and you know, that helps.
I loved the Ghost of Cincinnati, and I love that you forgave Pete Rose. Where did that song come from for you? Can you tell me a little bit about the genesis of that?
Yeah, the Ghost of Cincinnati is actually like inspired by a screenplay for a film that hasn't been made yet, but it's called Dandelion, and it's written by a filmmaker, Nicole Reigel, who has an amazing film out right now called Holler, that's set in Eastern Ohio about two siblings that are survive as scrappers in like an industrial wasteland, pulling copper and stuff out of old factories. But it's a really beautiful film. And Nichols had written this screenplay that's about a struggling songwriter in Cincinnati, Ohio, who is kind of at the end of their rope and like feels empty and hollow like a ghost. And kind of, you know, someone that's like really at the, you know, overextended, overworked. And it, I just really related to it personally, but also like friends and family that I've lost or, you know, feel like I've lost. And just, I think that's what it's about. It's about wandering around your hometown, feeling like a ghost, and you're looking at places you've been and people, you know, old friends, and but they can't see you. And it's just this sort of, I guess, nostalgic, slightly mournful, but ultimately cathartic song about like feeling like a ghost, you know, and maybe looking for meaning in your past, and which is what a lot of the record is about.
It's funny. I was a screenwriting major in school, and whenever I was stuck on a plot point or a scene, I would go out for a walk and listen to music, and it would always reset me. I would somehow either take a mood from the music or a line from the lyric or something, and it would send me in a new direction. Do you do the opposite musically? Do you take musical inspiration from stories that you hear, either screenplays or just things that people tell you?
Yeah, definitely. I feel like I get, especially when I watch films, it could even be like an extremely like whatever, just a feel good movie on a plane or something, but I will get into like a heightened emotional state or lift something accidentally from it, usually musically. Like I remember the national song Wasp Nest is like was directly taken from a movie without me even knowing it, not, you know, just inspired by it, but I think that the music was, but I think it often happens that way for me, or if I'm reading a book and, you know, you just get, I don't know, you just get into a state of mind, and that's when you feel musical or feel creative. So definitely happens that way.
Let's take a moment to breathe. Deep inhale. Extend your spine. Remain focused on what you're doing. If safe to do so, exhale slowly, leaning to one side. Inhale back to center. If safe to do so, exhale slowly to the opposite side. Find mental health resources at loveyourmindtoday.org. This message is brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ed Council.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing. This week, I'm talking to acclaimed musician and entrepreneur, Mr. Worldwide himself, Pitbull.
A lot of artists in general, people that are very creative, sometimes tend to overthink. That's one of my number one rules. Don't ever overthink. You can think ahead, but don't overthink. And what I mean by that is when they start to write a record, they're like, oh, that's not the line. Oh, that's not this. Oh, it's not that. And everybody has a creative process. I'm not knocking it. For me, I just let it flow.
In these exciting times, we're looking to the math, the strategy and analytics, and the magic, the creative spark, more than ever. Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The biggest stars in country music will be taking the stage at our 2024 iHeart Country Festival, presented by Capital One.
iHeart Country.
Jason Aldean. Keith Urban. Jelly Roll. Old Dominion. Lady A. Riley Green. Ashley McBride. Brothers Osborne. Walker Hayes. All hosted by Bobby Bones at Austin's Moody Center. Saturday, May 4th. Stream only on Hulu. Starting at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific.
Do you feel that you get more inspiration overall looking outward or looking inward?
It's a good question. I mean, I think I find myself, you know, music for me is a very internal thing where it's almost like my natural state or something is to be playing music. If you leave me alone in a room, if there is an instrument there, I'll like, it's like gravity pulls me towards it. And then it like the music kind of comes, it's like turning on a faucet or something. And so I guess it's more internal, but I'm not conceptual in the sense of, you know, I'm not thinking outside of myself. Like I want it to be like this color and that, you know, this sort of thing. I'm much more like actually just searching for the mysterious tonic inside myself, I guess. So I guess I'd have to say internal.
Is this something that you do every day? Like some people jog every day or do yoga. Is it a daily practice for you writing?
Yeah, I would say, like, ever since I was a kid, it's just kind of, it's almost, it is, it's kind of like riding a bike where, like, I just play, it feels good physically to play. And I think that's how I got good at instruments, was just like, literally, like, it's like an exercise. And then it's only sometimes where there's something that pops out in your brain, or like that you start playing something and there's a little kernel of something that feels elevated, or like, that's something, let me like grab it and like try to make something out of it. Usually I'm just like, we call it twin tinkle. It's like two twins peeing in a toilet or something. That's kind of a gross reference, but basically it's like literally like I'm just like, you know, like playing random notes. But anyways, I have a twin brother, that you know that. But.
You're gonna make fun of me for this question, but are you superstitious at all about how it happens? Is there a certain time of day or a certain room you want to sit in, or a certain instrument that you want to use that you really feel, you know, is, I don't want to say lucky because that's really silly, but are you superstitious about the sort of, to me, a person who's never written a song before, seems like magic. Is there a sort of an element of like, you want to make sure everything's right to get the muse there?
Nice you asked that, because I'm deeply superstitious. And
wonderful, me too.
It's kind of a strange thing. Like, if I have a bad thought in the middle of the night, I can be asleep, but I have to knock on my head 3 times. So like, if I, it's a weird thing, like with my right hand, it's this, I'm sounding like a real weirdo now, but like I, if I think like, oh, my friend may be in trouble, or my daughter's sick or something, some thought that is just sort of like, you know, not true, but could be true, then I knock on my head. So, but with music, I'm the same way, where it's like, it's more, I would say it's more like if you, I like to be intentional. So if I'm going to sit down and play a shaker on the song, on a new song or something, I have to like play it properly, beginning to end, like as though we're playing music in a room. And if I don't do that, if I don't have like a real, you know, like the simplest thing, a shaker on a song, but I have this thing where I have to kind of like take it really seriously. So in a way, like, not like, oh, this is the most important shaker, but just like kind of, because I'm superstitious. If you don't value what you're making, it's not going to be any good or something. And I, this is the same with like instruments. I when I get a new guitar or a new whatever it is, those instruments like almost write songs for you. It's weird because they have like, each instrument is different, and you feel this like, I don't know. It's like you're finding what's inside of it. I mean, I'm not, that sounds like mumbo jumbo, but it is actually like, you know, like some of the folklore songs on Taylor's record, some of the music, like it was because I had this new guitar, this rubber bridge guitar that I had gotten from the late 50s. And it just sounded, you know, it's that invisible string song. It just, the music, it just kind of happened. You know, it was like, just came out of, I was just playing it. It was like, just kind of came out.
I probably should have said this earlier. Congratulations on the Grammy. Sorry, major faux pas for not mentioning the other earlier.
Usually that's all anyone wants to get me to talk about. So that's good.
Getting that sort of accolade and that kind of attention, what does that do to you creatively? Is it liberating to get that sort of affirmation, or does it kind of mess with your head in a certain way?
Honestly, it was just fun to see, to be together with Taylor and Jack and a bunch of the people that worked on the record, and for Taylor to win her third album of the year and to become the first woman to do so. And I just think she really deserved it. And that was special to be there. And we had a great time. It was like kind of like a very, very memorable period, like hanging out with friends. And she sang Renegade actually when we were there in LA. That's when we did that song and for Big Red Machine. But I think it doesn't really go to my head, because I've been around the block, and I know you're really only as good as what you just did, you know. And also that the media, it's like, no matter what you do, there's everything you make, some people are going to love it. Hopefully your fans and listeners like fall in love with music you make, but there's always going to be like snarky critics that try to beat you down, even for your best work. And so a lot of times it's for your best work. And I think, and yeah, I see friends go through that over and over. And it's kind of like, honestly, it's the thing that bums me out about the music industry, is like that you have to kind of be like subjected to random criticism from people who might not make songs or really like, or have it, they might be prejudging you. And that doesn't happen to me very often, but it's just kind of like, I think no matter how many awards you win or whatever, you still have to go. You still have to run the gauntlet every time. And it's kind of the part that takes the joy out of it for a lot of people and for me. But it's like nice, like this conversation is great to talk about the music, talk about what it feels like to make it. That's what's important. And also, like, I care about what the songs mean to people, but I don't really care about like awards and all that kind of stuff, because you can't, like, I mean, you know, I might win more Grammys in my life, or maybe I've already won my Grammys and that's it. You know what I mean? So you can't really get too attached to that kind of stuff.
And speaking of Renegade, Taylor tweeted this really wonderful message to you when she shared that song a few weeks ago. And she thanked you. I want to read it because I want to make sure I get this right. Thanking you for ushering her into your world of creativity where you don't overthink, you just make music. And I wanted to ask you, and this is a question from somebody who overthinks everything. How do you not overthink the music? Like, is that ever a struggle? How do you just clear the decks of everything and really just, I mean, not to get too zen, but sort of be in that moment and not overthink it?
I feel like I've just learned it over time that, like, the best things that I've ever made, it wasn't so much that I was trying hard and overthinking. It was like they appeared in they almost felt evergreen or effortless because, you know, I was making music just to make it without really thinking what it's for or worrying about what, you know, how it would be perceived or received. And I still, as much as, like, I hate to wake up on the day that an album comes out and read about why I'm good or bad, it's like, I still thankfully can be a person that is, you know, free. I in the studio, it's like, I'm still connected to the wonder of what it's like to just make stuff and to, you almost feel like a kid. Like, you should feel like a kid, I think, in the studio, making music with your friends, embracing that process without having too much self-doubt or self-criticism, because it can be paralyzing, like insecurity and those kinds of things, when I just think it's not productive. I've learned this from different friends and from, you know, Justin is really helpful in that sense. Like, just make stuff, don't worry about it. And then, like, at some point, see where it falls, you know? And that's kind of also, Big Red Machine is very much about that, like reconnecting with the feeling of when you first start making music, what that feels like, just like this weird electricity of like, well, we just made a song. Wow. Like, this is beautiful, you know? And as far as like how that song fits into your career or the context of music history, all that kind of stuff, like, you can't really, that's out of your control. You know what I mean? You just got to make stuff and like be an artist, be expressive. That's basically how I think about it.
Snakes, zombies, sharks, heights, speaking in public. The list of fears is endless. But while you're clutching your blanket in the dark, wondering if that sound in the hall was actually a footstep, the real danger is in your hand when you're behind the wheel. And while you might think a great white shark is scary, what's really terrifying and even deadly is distracted driving. Eyes forward, don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, Stories from the Frontiers of Marketing. This week, I'm talking to acclaimed musician and entrepreneur, Mr. Worldwide himself, Pitbull.
A lot of artists in general, people that are very creative, sometimes tend to overthink. That's one of my number one rules. Don't ever overthink. You can think ahead, but don't overthink. And what I mean by that is when they start to write a record, they're like, oh, that's not the line. Oh, that's not this. Oh, it's not that. And everybody has a creative process. I'm not knocking it. For me, I just let it flow.
In these exciting times, we're looking to the math, the strategy and analytics, and the magic, the creative spark, more than ever. Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The biggest stars in country music will be taking the stage at our 2024 iHeart Country Festival, presented by Capital One.
iHeart Country.
Jason Aldean. Keith Urban. Jelly Roll. Old Dominion. Lady A. Riley Green. Ashley McBride. Brothers Osborne. Walker Hayes. All hosted by Bobby Bones at Austin's Moody Center. Saturday, May 4th. Stream only on Hulu. Starting at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific.
What is it about certain songs that make them Big Red Machine songs as opposed to national songs or songs for Justin's album or songs for Taylor's album? Is there something about Big Red Machine songs that set them apart, either musically or emotionally?
I feel like there is a feeling, there's like an element of like improvisation and kind of like, maybe it's this also a meditative quality. At least this album, there's like something that is emotionally cathartic or soothing about it. But I think to me, it is like this element of improvisation or some, they're looser, you know, they're a little bit looser and a little bit more like open to somebody like bouncing around inside of them. A lot of the drumming and a lot of the guitar playing are pretty like impressionistic or something. You know, there's drum machines which hold it together, but then you have like lots of different people bouncing off these songs. And I don't know, it's a, it, at least that's been so far the two Big Red Machine albums that has been like part of the feeling. There's like a Big Red Machine sound or something. I can't quite put my finger on it. But then I would also say that I just make a lot of stuff not really knowing what it is. And eventually I share these, I call them sketches, because they're like, they're in song form and there's a lot of like internal melody and stuff, but they're very open and they can be altered. And it's really just me like developing a foundation, built, you know, like a foundation we can build on. And so there are times where like it could be a national song, or it could be something I shared with Taylor that she wrote to, or they could become the song Reese. It might have been a Bon Iver song, but instead it was a Big Red Machine song. But like, I think I like that blurriness, you know. I think that's also part of what makes it interesting.
How has your relationship with Justin evolved since, what was it, 2008, I think, for the Dark Was the Night compilation? Has it evolved, or has it generally stayed pretty similar from the first times you started collaborating?
It's definitely evolved. I mean, I think mainly it's like our friendship has grown very strong over many years. I think it's just, there's something very relaxed, and like, I think we have a very strong connection and we care about each other, and they don't put a lot of pressure on each other. So it's nice in that way, because we obviously collaborate on many things, or have collaborated on many things, but it's like only because we feel like it or we want to. And that can kind of ebb and flow depending on where you are in life and what you're doing. And, you know, with this album, it was like, it started, we did a lot of work together. Then I took it and ran with it. And then we came back together, did a lot of work. And he like kind of goes like that in these different phases. But mainly it's just fun to spend time together. And that's when a lot of things have happened. It's just because we're hanging out. So, but yeah, I don't know. I have a huge amount of respect for him as a musician, obviously, and as a human being. He's just a lovely, caring person.
Well, you do beautiful work together. I mean, the songs on this album are so personal. You mentioned Brycey, Reese, Hutch. I mean, there's just so much of you in there and your life. And the cover is really, I mean, in a lot of ways, such a gut punch to anybody who's endured loss in their family or you know, watched their childhood kind of, I don't want to say degrade, but there's this anxiety that I feel with each passing year of, you know, you grow up, there's this narrative of you grow up, you leave home, you throw yourself into your life, your career, your new relationships. And then you start to find that the things in your past aren't quite where you left them. There, people go, they change, they pass on. And I guess this is sort of a slightly dour version of John Lennon's "Life Is What Happens When You're Busy Making Other Plans." But I was reminded of this when I saw the album cover, which is a childhood photo of you and your brother and sister with your grandmother, Stella, under the title, "How Long Do You Think It's Gonna Last?" I want to just ask you, what does the cover and the title mean to you? What is that expression for you? Because it was very evocative to me, and I want to know if I'm totally off base.
No, you're right on target. I mean, I think it is, when you're a kid, when you're a child, and I had a nice childhood, and like the world is, it's before you've lost your innocence in a way, before you've maybe been corrupted by like the anxiety and uncertainty and, you know, things that happen as an adult or pressures that come with like being an adult and, you know, seeing, you know, all this good and bad things that happen with in life. I think that there's like I am nostalgic maybe about my childhood, and because it was very idyllic, and I think at some point you lose that sense of innocence, and with it you take on a lot of my family's still here. Those, my brother and sister are still here, but you know, there have been family traumas. There have been people we've lost, and you know, friends I've lost to depression, or you know, marriages breaking apart, or floors falling out from under you, to quote the Matt Bernier and Blood Buzz. But like, I think it's like I think this album is kind of looking back at my childhood, or Justin's, or Aeneas, or many of the writers, and like kind of like looking for meaning and remedies in your past, and like ways to carry it forward. And so how long do you think it's going to last? It is partly like a childhood or a family or a, you know, a winning streak, a losing streak, a creative streak, you know, a marriage, all these things, you know. And then it's also thinking like, even my relationship with my brother or something, like, can we stay this close for the rest of our life? I hope so. But you know, like, as you you grow. And now we live on different sides of the ocean. My brother and my sister live thousands of miles away from me. And like, but we grew up so close. And so, yeah, it's just thinking about it. I guess it is a very, it's a very personal thought. And the, what it means to me is very personal.
Thought it was a beautiful tribute to that sentiment and those in your family and friends. There was a quote you gave recently where you said of this album, "I was using this project to really try different things and find the connection between my different impulses." I guess my question is, did you find the connection? What did this album teach you about yourself and the way you make music?
Yeah, I feel like I did. I mean, I feel like I was able to, it is a synthesis or a distillation of like a lot of my musical. You know, I feel like when I listen to Big Red Machine, this album, I think I realized I made it for myself, and I can listen to it. I can drive down the road and just blast it, and it's like a total joyride. It's
weird. Oh, yeah.
It's like, I think that's why it, maybe it means more to me than a lot of things I've made in that sense, because it's just like, there is a looseness and it goes to many places, but like all, overall, just the feeling in it. Yeah, I like this kind of music. I like the simplicity, but also the like complexity at the same time of it. And I like aesthetically where it's sitting, but it is, I like to take things, like take an unusual beat or an unusual pattern and write a song against it and then see how a friend, you know, can carve into that. And that happened over and over and over. And then we were able to develop it into an album. And yeah, I think it feels special to me, you know. And that's the nice thing is like, I think a lot of people are feeling that listening to it, but in a way it doesn't matter, because that's like, for me, you know, when I look back on my life as a musician, that'll be something that will always be there, you know, as a special thing, which is great. You know, it's like, that's also why you make art, I think, is because like gives your life meaning or something.
Well, I'm really glad that you enjoy it as much as we all do. That's good to hear.
Just like an audience of one. Yeah, I think.
Not to look too far forward, but I've read that you're working on new songs with Justin now. Are you able to talk a little bit about those? More Big Red Machine tracks, something else? What's next for you guys?
I mean, honestly, like we both do our own thing and have our own, you know, he obviously does a ton of work and he's prolific and has his own studio and so do I. But yeah, like there are some new ideas that are really, I think, special that just happened again out of nowhere. I think we wouldn't actually know what it is for some time. And then also like I've been, you know, starting to think a lot about the national and other things. So I think it's like, you know, no matter what, that's the other thing is like every time you climb that mountain of making something, right, as soon as you master it, you're kind of like back at the bottom of the mountain again. You know what I mean? So then you're like, oh man, can't stay up there for a little while longer. You know, it's like you gotta, this is sometimes it's also important to burn the, you know, Justin says like you gotta burn the forest down. That's a bad metaphor right now with all the wild fires, but like, you know what I mean, like creatively I think sometimes you have to like let the field lay fallow for a while, and I haven't done that in a while, so maybe I should do that a bit.
I know, I felt bad even asking that question. Oh, incredible album, but what's next, what are you doing now? Like I was a little soon for that question, but just wanted to ask. I heard you and your brother are working on a theatrical production of Cyrano. How's that going? Did I have that right? It sounds really cool.
It's actually a movie. It's like, it was an off-Broadway show that Matt Berninger and Bryce and I and Corinne Besser, Matt's wife, worked with Erica Schmidt, this theater director and writer. She wrote the screenplay it's an adaptation of Cyrano de Bergerac, which actually it's a major movie now that Joe Wright, the English director, adapted it and directed it, and it premieres soon. It's like very soon, but I think it comes out properly in the winter, and it's a musical, but it's, you know, it's a period piece, and Peter Dinklage plays Cyrano, and it's like a crazy orchestral score, and yeah, you know, my brother was able to really like do some amazing work on it in terms of the orchestration, and I think we're really proud of the songs that we wrote. So yeah, it's beautiful. I hope everybody sees it.
Oh man, I can't wait to check it out. Oh, Aaron, thank you so much for your time today and your music. It's been such a joy talking to you. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Take care, man.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Inside the Studio, a production of iHeartRadio.
For more episodes of Inside the Studio or other fantastic shows, check out the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Let's take a moment to breathe. Deep inhale. Extend your spine. Remain focused on what you're doing. If safe to do so, exhale slowly, leaning to one side. Inhale back to center. If safe to do so, exhale slowly to the opposite side. Find mental health resources at loveyourmindtoday.org. This message is brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ed Council.
Listen to the highly anticipated 100th episode of Tank and Jay Valentine's R&B Money Podcast with artist Chris Brown.
Even working with you from Carrie Hilson, Adonis, back in the day, I was 15, 14 doing that album. So like I said, I was in school like, okay, this is how you do it. This is how you make a song. There's a verse, a pre-chorus, and then a hook. I didn't know none of that.
You learned that over a summer, bro.
That's what it felt like.
That's what it felt like.
Listen to R&B Money on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing. This week, I'm talking to acclaimed musician and entrepreneur, Pitbull.
I think that education is the real revolution, because as much as we speak about all the problems that there is in society and the world today, my mother's always told me, son, don't worry, the world's always been coming to an end. Don't let it scare you out of living.
Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.